You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us in studio via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Send us your comments, good comments. They'll get read on air, bad comments. They might get mocked on air. So, you know, risk reward for everybody that's listening right now. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. Nice to see you on this beautiful 30th day of January. Lovely weather outside. And more importantly, we are now officially, after months and 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 months of talking, we are officially 1 month away, less than 1 month away, rather, until the NHL's trade deadline.
Good morning, Drew. I can definitely tell you right now that I can't wait till the trade deadline.
That's good. It's
counting
Monday.
Down the hours, the minutes, the seconds.
Well, at least we know that a resolution to the ongoing saga regarding the Winnipeg Jets will come to an end sometime between now and February the 29th at 2 p.m. Central Time. Richard, good morning to you.
Morning, Drew.
How are you doing, both gentlemen? You guys are looking good. You're looking awake. You're looking to get right into it. Talk about some hockey, some Winnipeg Jets discussion. We start, of course, as the Jets enter into the All-Star break weekend with a record of 22-24-3, 47 points, 9 points behind the Nashville Predators for the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. According to Sports Club stats, if the Jets were to get to 91 points on the season, that would give them a 52.5% chance of making the playoffs. That results in a 29-4 record in their final 33 games. Given their schedule for the next 3 months, what odds do you give the Winnipeg Jets of accomplishing this feat, that incredible 29-4 run to make it to the playoffs?
Well, it's amazing that you're talking about 91 points, right, Drew? Because last year it took 99 points to get into the playoffs, right? But it's going to be an uphill battle. We know that. And it was nice that the Jets were able to pick up a victory over the Coyotes right before the All-Star break. But I think the Jets know what's in front of them. It was a pretty poor November, followed by a pretty mediocre December and January. And because how close the Central Division is, you know you're going to have to beat out Nashville and Colorado now to get into the playoffs. So it's going to be difficult. But, I mean, you look at what Ottawa did last year. You look at what Minnesota did last year. It's definitely doable, right? But it's going to be tough, and they've got a lot of road games coming up in February, and they've got 3 games against the Dallas Stars, so it's not going to be easy, but it's definitely not impossible.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a less than 5% chance. I mean, it's very unlikely, as you said. You never know in terms of a hot goaltender and having your whole crew back healthy. The Jets have been pretty fortunate aside from this blip recently, and you've obviously seen corresponding struggles. But I think overall, if they do get the team back together as a whole, and have Hellebuyck firing, you never know. You never know. I mean, it's unlikely, but you never know.
Ezzy, you mentioned the Ottawa Senators in your answer, and can they be this year's Ottawa Senators? Of course, last year on January 29th, so 364 days ago, the Ottawa Senators were 9 points behind Boston for the second wild card spot. That was the day they recalled Andrew Hammond from the minors and went on their incredible run to make it into the playoffs. 18-18-9 at last year's All-Star break were the Ottawa Senators. They finished in their last 31 games 23-4-4. It seems like, and I don't have any empirical evidence in front of me, but it seems like each year there's one team that gets on a really hot streak at the end of the year and makes this unexpected run into the playoffs. We saw it with Minnesota last year when they acquired Devan Dubnyk and their season took off. We saw it last year with Ottawa and Andrew Hammond, and they took off. Can you foresee the Jets being that team, or is the fact that they're in the more difficult Western Conference going to preclude them from, and the more difficult Central Division in particular, going to preclude them from being that team that makes that incredible run?
Well, I think the reason that, I mean, Drew, look at the production so far this season and how off and on the Jets have been. And that's what would concern me most. in terms of, you know, you're going to get spurts of really good play and spurts of poor play, and you have the distraction, which we haven't mentioned, of Byfuglien and Ladd having not been taken care of. So these are all factors that play in here. And when you look at Minnesota, you know, Minnesota, for example, last year they get Dubnyk and he's playing especially well. You know, their mindset there is to get better, and they don't have the distraction of these pending free agents. You know, Ottawa too, was there any distraction there about a big two, is, you know, it's not like Carlson and Turris were pending free agents last year.
No.
So I think they're comparable in the sense that it happened recently, Minnesota, because they're in the division. But I'm Minnesota, you wanna lean on more. I think Ottawa's in a poor conference and different thing. Boston faded last year, obviously got rid of their general manager. But all those things, I mean, there's still things that are, that there's still a lot of, there's still a lack of similarity, put it that way, between the squads.
Right, and like you said before, Richie, I mean, we can talk all about who's going to be this year's Ottawa, right, and who's going to be this year's Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned how hard it's going to be because it's in the Central Division, Drew, but, you know, Minnesota pulled it off, and you could say that maybe Minnesota's a little bit ahead of the Jets as far as where they are on the development curve. But look, I think the Jets knew how hard it was going to be when they looked at their schedule back in December, and they didn't have the results that they wanted on the road. And as Richie mentioned, I mean, if the Jets keep playing this kind of 500 hockey, they're mm-hmm. not going to be in it. But from now until the trade deadline, one thing is for sure, the Jets aren't in any position to tank because it's just so close. And you know that regardless of what happens with Ladd and Buff, the Jets are going to be pushing to get back in the playoff race. And right now they're looking at Minnesota, which is unbelievable because Colorado was last in the division over a month ago. And now it's the Wild that they're chasing. The Wild at one point, I believe, were 10 or 11 points ahead of the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Jets find themselves in a position that's who they're looking at. But it's going to be difficult. I mean, I don't think
9-1, 8-2.
It's got to be something like that, Richie. It's got to be 5, 6, 7 wins in a row.
Yeah.
Like Rich said, it's 8 out of 10 wins, whatever, and it's going to be difficult. But when you have the road record like the Jets have, and you have the division record like the Jets have, they haven't been very good in their own division this year.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make a run. So it's going to be difficult, and it's definitely within them to do this. But I think when you just look at it from a pure mathematics point of view, it's an uphill climb.
Would you say, Richard, that the sagas of Ladd and Buffalo, I mean, to your point, you mentioned, you know, Minnesota didn't have any sort of, their biggest bugaboo last year was the lack of goaltending. Then they addressed their goaltending, mm-hmm. so it's reasonable to expect that they started playing better. Ottawa was just sort of lightning in a bottle with Andrew Hammond. They didn't have any expectations really
at all. That's right.
And they didn't have any pending unrestricted free agents. Is the saga of Ladd and Buffalo just too, with it being unresolved, you know, at least right now, and who knows when it'll resolve. I mean, obviously February 29th is when it'll resolve, but that's the latest date. Is that just too big of a cloud over everything else right now to expect a Ottawa or Minnesota type run from this team?
I'm not going to say it's too big of a cloud, but it's a factor. They're telling you it's a factor. They're admitting that it's something on their minds. So that uncertainty, and then the other factor is if the Jets aren't able to sign them, you have to assume they're going to trade them.
Sure.
So that'll directly impact your ability to make the playoffs because they're likely not going to get players back of the same quality. So there you go. You have a month sample there, and if you sign them, then maybe you make a run, one or both of them. If you sign neither of them, you don't have a chance.
Can you see Kevin Cheveldayoff taking, say, the next 2 weeks? You got, what, you know, half a dozen games in the next 2 weeks after the All-Star break, and saying, you know, if this team maybe all of a sudden gets on a hot streak, that could change his opinion as to what he does with Ladd and Byfuglien.
Well, if they were to, I mean, that I don't know if he would or not, Drew. That would be foolish. You can't make a plan for 5 to 6 years down the road based on 5 to 6 games. You've had 5 years here to evaluate that, almost 5 years, five full seasons to evaluate that. It would be foolish to make a decision based on your chances in one season and based on a 5 to 10 game period of time.
Yeah, I agree with that, Drew, and it's a good question, though, and I think if you look at the February schedule coming up with all of the road games, 10 of the 12 games are against teams that are in a playoff spot right now. So if the Jets are able to get back into a playoff spot come the trade deadline, it'll really be remarkable. You know, we talked about the 3 games against the Stars coming up.
They play Dallas Tuesday, of course, and then they have a back-to-back against Dallas, a home and away.
I'm not sure that's a terrible thing. It gets them playing a better game. It gets them I think it pumps them up. I mean, look at the performances against these bad teams that they've played, with due respect to like New Jersey, Arizona, San Jose. I mean, these teams are teams that they ought to be, Colorado ought to be beating at home, and they haven't performed well at all. So let's look at, I mean, Arizona notwithstanding, but they lost to them on December 31st, even though they outplayed them.
Sure.
The point is, maybe playing against good teams motivates them and gets them to a better spot. I don't know.
Play to the level of their competition. Yeah.
And you get the Oilers a couple times. You get the Hurricanes a couple times. So, I mean, everybody has a hard schedule at this time of year. This schedule is going to balance itself out. But I agree with Rich. Getting back to that point, everybody wants to talk about that right now. And I realize there was a lot, you know, in the news at the All-Star break here in Nashville, Drew, and you want to get to that next segment and the segments following that. But, I mean, I agree with Rich. I don't think that there's any impact. The standings don't have much of an impact on whether Ladd and Byfuglien are going to be signed. It has to be coming from a long-term vision, long-term plan.
Well, and okay, so we've talked about on the show many times before about deadline hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that February 29th is the deadline. It's the NHL trade deadline.
Uh-huh.
Do you expect that within, you know, the True North management, the Jets management, there's an earlier deadline to February 29th to get a resolution on Ladd and Byfuglien? Do you think that there's an internal deadline besides the February 29th NHL trade deadline?
I really don't know, Drew. I mean, you hear from what Darren Dreger is saying that these guys aren't really on the market yet. From what I can understand, from my understanding, they've floated the market and they have an idea of what they're going to be able to get for these players. So I think that deadline is the 29th. They probably have an internal deadline of maybe a little bit before to see if they can sign them and then be more aggressive on the market. But I don't think this is a situation where the Jets haven't, you know, gone out there and seen what, and looked at what they can get for both players. They have an idea right now. They would have to amp that up a bit, probably. Certainly, I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. But they've canvassed the value of these players, so they're not going to jump into it 2 days before the deadline and say, okay, what can we get for these guys?
I think everyone believes that if either Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien isn't signed by the trade deadline, that they're going to be traded and they're not just going to remain a member of the Winnipeg Jets till the season ends and become a UFA, right? So it's an interesting question. At what point are these guys moved? Is it right before the trade deadline, or is it maybe a couple of weeks leading up to it if they are traded? Who knows? There's still the possibility, Drew, that both of these guys are signed. I think people forget that.
And we'll talk about that later on in the program. We're going to have an NHL All-Star Break roundtable featuring Scott Billick and Jeff Hamilton. So the five of us, the final hour of today's show, will be an All-Star Game roundtable where we will, of course, bandy about the different questions that are hanging over the Winnipeg Jets organization. As we go to break, on the other side, we're going to come back. We're going to discuss Byfuglien and Trouba. If the Jets re-sign both, is there too much money being spent on the Jets back end? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:15 in the morning, January the 30th. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve for more information about joining Team Illegal Curve. Gentlemen, talking about the amount of money that would be locked up on the back end of the Winnipeg Jets if they were to sign Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba. Currently, the Jets spend $25.7 million on their defense, which is the highest percentage spent on defense in the entire NHL compared to that team's salary cap. So not looking at the 71.4 salary cap, but looking at the Jets' current expenditures. 41.3% of their salary expenditure goes to their defense, 32% of the allowed salary cap. If Buff signs for $8 million a year and Trouba signs for $6.5 million per year, and then you bring in another depth defenseman, you know, maybe it's Adam Partey, re-signs for the $1 million or whatever it is, right around that same sort of $1 million mark.
It's just Paul Postman, 887, he signed for next year.
Pardon me?
Even if it's Paul Postman signed at 887 for next year.
Right. But if the Jets, you know, want to keep, you know, eight defensemen on their active roster, something along those lines, it'll be up to around $31.1 million spent on their defense next year. 44% of the allowed NHL salary cap. Mm-hmm. Is that too much money on the Jets' back end? I mean, this is a team that's spent a lot on their defense since day one, since they've returned here from Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, Drew, that's true. And I was talking about it with Matt and Brandon earlier this week.
Name drop.
And no, it's something to name drop. No, it's something to think about for sure. I actually remember writing about this when the Jets came back in 2011 that they spent a lot of money on the back end.
Not a lot has changed, Richie.
Well, yeah, that's probably a concern, Ezzy. Right? I mean, you haven't won a playoff game, and you've used that same formula year after year. I guess the question is, you know, can you make it work? So, I mean, every situation is different. Right now, your starting netminder is making no money, but you're paying Pavlik. I mean, I know he's on IR right now, but you're paying Pavlik, you know, not insignificant money by any means, pretty good money. And so you're paying your goaltenders combined, still a pretty low mark considering that Hellebuck makes so little.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, there's only so much money to go around. So if your defense is going to be paid that highly, I guess my point at the end of the day is this. If your defense is going to be paid that much of the cap, then you better have the best defense in the National Hockey League. And I don't think the Jets have the best defense in the National Hockey League. I think it's a good defense. But we went over it. There's about five, six defenses we think are better than the Jets. Maybe some more, maybe fewer in certain situations. But you got to get what you pay for.
Sure.
And if you're not, then that's a concern. So, yeah, I guess in a roundabout way, Drew, it is too much to give. And I think it points to the need almost, as if you're going to sign Trouba, it probably benefits you in a sense, at least short term, to get him on a bridge deal, A, to see what he's going to be like in 2 years. There's a risk there for sure, both ways. And B, to keep his cap hit down a bit to be able to maneuver.
And I bet the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff have thought a lot about that, because you could use, in theory, that extra money to bring in a free agent forward in the offseason, right? And that's probably where the Jets are lacking the most this year, is kind of that depth veteran presence on the bottom six forward line. So whether that was going to be a Lee Stempniak or somebody else who was signed in the offseason who was either on a PTO or something like that. I mean, you know, Richie mentioned when we did that exercise at the beginning of the season, we kind of all agreed that the Jets were a legitimate top 10 in defense. And that was one of the main reasons why they got into the playoffs last year.
Yes.
In addition to having the most solid goaltending that they had had since coming over from Atlanta. But you got to look at right now, especially how weak they are on the left side versus the right side. I mean, you've got most of that money tied up on the right side with Trouba, Buff, and Myers. And of course, you got Trouba playing on the left side now. And that, to me, is one of the reasons why he's been struggling offensively. I don't think that's been talked about enough, that Jacob Trouba, you know, has been playing on the left side when he's a natural right-handed defenseman. And not to say that he hasn't done a good job, but I think it's affected his offensive output a little bit. And maybe that's not going to help him in his negotiations coming out of his entry-level deal. But
that's a fair point, Izzy.
It's a situation where you really have to keep this defense together, though, don't you? I mean, Jacob Trouba's not going anywhere. I think we'd all agree here that the way Buff has played, especially heading into the All-Star break, and he's going to be one of the centerpieces of the All-Star break along with John Scott, especially sounds like he's going to be in the fastest skater. I mean, he's such an integral part of the team, but you're going to have so much money tied up that is that going to maybe hinder your ability to sign a free agent that you maybe spend $4 or $5 million on? I don't think any of us would think that the Jets are going to be a big time free agent player, depending on how the season goes, but you're probably looking at depth signings, right?
Sure.
You're looking at maybe acquiring another Matthew Perreault or a fourth line winger or something like that. Yeah. But they're
not going to be in the Steven Stamkos conversation.
Right. And
that's right.
It's a lot of money tied up, but you know, you look at the contracts and most of them are pretty good, especially Tyler Myers. And yeah, you're going to have to pay Buff. Buff's going to get probably seven and a half minimum.
Right.
Rich mentions maybe even eight if it's a shorter term deal. And you know, the issue too with the Jets is they don't have a lot of defensemen that are knocking at the door, right? I mean, Josh Morrissey, sure, he could be in the NHL next year. Are you going to sign another free agent defenseman? Most likely not, especially when you consider there's a good chance that Buff and Trouba are both going to be signed long-term.
Yeah, their prospects are more knocking on the forward end.
That's correct. They have more high-end forward prospects. If you look at the forward group in terms of the actual dollars spent, they have they spend the third fewest amount of money on their forward group in the entire NHL this year at $31.1 million. I mean, it's just a... I mean, the problem is if you don't spend it on the defense, there's no real pressing need on, you know... I don't know where they take that money if they don't spend it on their defense, where they allocate it towards to really improve if they're not going to be big players in the free agent forward market or anything.
Well, I mean, you could do it via trade.
Sure,
and bring
that's
in a forward for, I mean, you trade a strength for a weakness, strength on defense, a weakness forward.
Yeah, I just never consider trades with this team. I think that's, you know, for, I think, obvious reasons in that they don't seem to make them very often.
Yeah, Drew, I think Richie made a good point earlier. When you consider the cost certainty in goal, I think that's kind of a little bit of an equalizer. When you consider that Andrei Pavlik's only got 1 year left on his contract, and I'm getting definitely ahead of myself here, but you're looking at a situation 2 years from now where your two goalies could be Hellebuck and Comrie. So, I mean, that now you have two guys on entry-level deals, and that kind of...
Then you're getting Hellebuck into... Then you're getting... You know, Hellebuck onto his next contract, right? That's the thing about this cap, as you move quick. Right, I mean, Hellebuck has a year after this, and then he's an RFA. So by the time that happens, so Pavlik goes from being cheap. Pavlik goes off the books if you let him go, whatever it may be that you do with him, and then Hellebuck needs to get paid. Somebody's always, the thing about this thing is somebody's always going to get paid.
Yeah, it's always
that's the way it works.
That's exactly how it works. I mean, there was an article. You know, it's just a constant negotiation. If it's not one player, it's the next player, and year after year after year, there are always going to be players that need to be that you need to negotiate with. You know, I don't have. Do you have a problem with what the Jets spend on their defense?
Right now, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's going to become a problem
because you're not getting.
If you're going to pay Trouba, and then you're going to have Buff, then that's a ton of money, Drew. It's a ton of money, and for me.
Sorry.
If it's a ton of money for me. If I'm spending that much money on my back end, I better be damn confident when we're up one goal at the end of a game. My team, if it's my team and we're up one goal at the end of a game, then I can put out two guys and I expect them to lock it down.
And Rich, you've seen that more this year, right? You've seen Paul Maurice shorten the bench a little bit with Trouba and Buff, but it's still not the best defense in the NHL. It's not the Chicago Blackhawks. It's not the St. Louis Blues. It's not the Minnesota Wild, Nashville Predators. Those are the top four in my opinion. You could maybe throw in a couple of other teams, maybe, but you're looking at a division that has some of the best defense in the NHL.
You are. I mean, do you trust that a pairing there, Enstrom, Myers, or Bufflin, Trouba, to lock it down and finish it up? And you could argue that you do or you don't. I'm just saying that even if you get into the argument, you wonder, that's a lot of cash. I mean, you're talking about Enstrom, the cap hits for a second here. Enstrom and Myers. So you're looking at all those guys and the rumors for Trouba's long-term deal, and that's speculation. You have four guys at minimum 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum. You're still paying Stewart 2.6 for another two more years after this. It's a lot of money in your top five.
It's a lot of money for a top five that you wouldn't say are especially defensively proficient. I mean, if you look at the what's the best attribute of all of, you know, of Enstrom, Myers, Bufflin, and Trouba. Trouba
well,
maybe
Trouba
a little
really
less so.
It's defense if he's on his game.
Yes, but
the other
three,
guys, it's
offense.
You know, it's offense.
Yeah. Richie, I think we've heard a lot about Ladd and Bufflin this year, rightly so, pending UFAs. But I think as we get into the off season and into early next year, I think the focus is going to be on that and whether the Jets should trade from a strength, which is, as you mentioned, one of the highest paid defenses in the NHL. No, the highest paid defense in the NHL, and moving one of these players to get stronger on forward.
But Enstrom has a no trade. Now, I mean, there's limitations to all these. I don't know the particulars on it. Myers has a no trade that kicks in next year, according to General Fanager. And then Bufflin might be getting one. Mm-hmm. He already has one. Might get one. And I'm not sure if Trouba will get one. And then Stewart, well, his contract's a no trade anyways, really. So how much... You might be able to make that move, in theory... But then you go in practice and you say, okay, and then he's like, I don't want to play there.
If the Jets were to spend more money, if they were to spend closer to the salary cap than they currently do, is the amount they spend on defense an issue?
Well, it's less of one, Drew, of course, because then you're putting more money up at forward, assuming that they would spend the extra money on forward.
Right. I mean, if they're all of a sudden, I mean...
I would say it's probably still an issue, but it's less of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the big function of that is that people are assuming they're still going to be a bottom-end spending team vis-a-vis the salary cap.
And, Drew, that could be one of the reasons why Buff hasn't been signed yet, but if the Jets management is looking at the proportion of their salary cap that's given to defensemen, and they've come to the realization that not only are they not going to be a deep playoff team, but it's hindering them from signing a free agent forward, you got to move one of these defensemen. I mean, we talked about it. Even though there might be no trade clauses on the board there, you have a lot of money that's going to be tied up long-term, especially when Trouba and potentially Byfuglien get signed.
It's amazing, you know, that the I think the dramatic effect that the salary cap is not going to rise is having really on all 30 NHL teams and the reverberations that are felt throughout the league. Teams that budgeted year, you know, because you do your budget and say, okay, I'm going to pay this guy a little bit more money in a couple years, but the salary cap's going to be a little bit more, so it won't hurt me as bad.
That's because I think most teams, the NHL, didn't think the Canadian dollar was going to be this weak, right?
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with it.
That's the biggest thing. And the fact that the new TV deal is in Canadian money.
That kills it. I mean, it hurts every single NHL team, and it has to make them make very difficult decisions that they thought probably weren't necessarily going to be at the front on the front burner.
I'm sure those ticket prices won't be going down and make up for this problem.
No, I think we all know that if at the end of the day, if anyone gets screwed, it's always the fans. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to do a Jets over-under segment looking at the remainder of the Winnipeg Jets season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Joining us next hour, Tom Lynn, the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, currently a player agent for Veritas Hockey. And then in about 1 hour's time to discuss the Dennis Wiedemann incident in Calgary, George Johnson is going to join us. This segment of the show brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio, with 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool. Get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off a new membership, visit radyjcc.com/illegalcurve for all your information. Gentlemen, a Winnipeg Jets over-under for the remainder of the season. We did this last year as well at the trade deadline.
So over.
Over? Like the segment's done? Okay, go to break.
That's
rest. We're done here.
That's good.
Yeah. Anyways, Jets over under. We have a dozen questions we will go through, and you'll say over or under. Currently, the Jets have 7 players with more than 10 goals. At the end of the season, over or under 4.5 Jets players having 20 or more goals.
Richie, am I going first here?
You better be going first.
I'm going to say that there are going to be under.
Do you want to expand on that at all?
Well, I'll give you the players who are going to have 20 goals.
Okay.
Blake Wheeler, Brian Little. I think Buff gets to 20.
Buff currently at 14.
Mm-hmm. And Shifley.
And Shifley, he's currently
at 12. Know what? I'll go, actually, I'm going to go even. Ehlers. Yeah. Over. Ehlers.
Okay. Richard?
Five. I'm going over as well.
You guys are both
going
over
there? Stafford is 14 goals.
Could be 6.
You never know if Ladd gets really hot here, so... You know, if Lads might score with this team or another team. So, I'm going to go over.
The Jets are currently averaging 4.3 minor penalties per game. At the end of the season, over or under the Jets averaging 4 minor penalties per game?
I'm going to go under that, Drew. I mean, they can't be taking as many penalties as they did earlier in the year. If they're going to have any run and Paul Maurice didn't get his message through, there's going to have to be less.
Yeah, I'm going to go under two, Richie and Drew, and I hope that we never have to talk about penalties on the show again.
I don't hold your breath on that one, I'm afraid. Andre Pavlik is currently on the IR, but is expected to return to the Jets lineup shortly after the All-Star break. With 32 regular season games remaining for the Jets, over or under Andre Pavlik getting 13 more starts in net this season?
Oh, under. Under, Drew. I mean, I think Connor Hellebuck has been very good. And I think that, first off, we don't even know when Pavlik's coming back. That seems to be a moving target.
Yes, it does.
So you look at the amount of games remaining, and Hellebuck being the guy right now, I think it's going to be under 13.
Isn't it unbelievable that we're sitting here at the end of January and Connor Hellebuck has started almost half of the games for the Jets? Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm going to go under. Especially considering that Pavlik might not be back till mid-February. So
I'm not shocked he's starting games for the Jets. How many is a surprising number? It doesn't shock me coming into the season. It didn't shock me.
You thought that he was going to
break through? I talked about in one of the summer shows, Drew, that you were away for, and talked about the possibility of a new netminder coming in, not being either of Hutchinson, Pavlik, and that has taken place. I don't think Ezzie thought either that it would be to this extent, but it doesn't shock me that somebody else got a shot here.
Shane Doan's injury is a blessing in disguise for the Jets to be able to start the Connor Hellebuyck era in net. Of course, they would never say that. Hellebuyck currently has a goals against average of 2.10. At the end of the season, over or under Hellebuck's goals against being 2.20?
Over.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, Richie just mentioned, that we thought that there might be a chance that someone aside from Pavlik or Hutchinson maybe comes in, which would obviously be Hellebuyck, but 2.1 for a goals against average for a rookie goaltender. He's got a couple shutouts, almost .930 save percentage. It's really incredible, just as an aside. I'm going to go with Richie. I'm going to go over. By the way, we're not in cahoots here, Drew, at all. I do think it's going to be tough for Hellebuyck to maintain 2.1, but it's incredible that, in his rookie season, 22 games in, he's putting up the numbers that he's put up. It's just not something that you see very often from rookie goalies in the NHL.
Matt Halaschuk, Andrew Kopp, and Anthony Peluso have combined for 2 goals in 85 games played.
That is mind-blowing. Like, that number is mind-blowing. Like, how did Jets fans not pull over on the curb and throw up after hearing those numbers?
Well, Matt Halaschuk's defense, he hasn't played much in the NHL this year, so.
Well, he's played more than you. He's played less than the other guys, but, I mean, Halaschuk is up to, 13 games.
I mean, again, I'm not blaming those players. I'm blaming the organization for having those players in the lineup for 85 games.
Yeah.
Over.
You haven't even let me finish the question yet.
Is over under 2 goals in the next 85 games?
So the question, over or under 5 total goals scored by those 3 players at season's end? Meaning, will they get 3 goals in the next? Five total. So they get,
Peluso, Kopp, and
Halaschuk. Will they get 3 goals in the next 32 games between the 3 of them?
Yes, over.
That's a tough one. Joke aside, I don't expect Peluso to score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Halaschuk, will he draw in the lineup?
Richie, don't think too hard about it.
Will Halaschuk draw in the lineup consistently? And will Kopp, will Kopp score 3 goals? He scored 1. I'll push.
You'll push. Okay. Yeah. Still sit on that fence there.
Are you writing these down, by the way?
No. I'll go back and I'll listen to the audio of the show.
Yeah, right, Drew. And for sure you will.
Yeah. Since, thanks, Richie.
Drew, you know what? We can put on the board.
If we're not writing these down, Richie, why are we keeping track of this?
Well, first of all, 2 things. Ezzie brought a present for Drew's baby. Mentioned that on air.
I was going to mention that next segment.
Okay, well, you mentioned it now. And then as in return to us, you're going to give us a gift. And you're going to go back on both over-under segments at the beginning of the season and now.
Okay.
And you're going to get grades.
What was the over-under on me getting Aaron a present?
I thought it was like 4%. So
he pulled it off. We'll bring the gift out and present it on air coming up next segment.
I texted Drew, and he can back this up. I was actually polling coworkers from my office about what to get Aaron. I wanted to make sure I got a good gift.
You
and I think
good?
You like the gift.
I do like the gift.
And it's a nice little toy. It's interactive.
Yes, you get full props for successfully bringing my daughter a gift as you promised on Wednesday's midweek show.
4 months late,
but that's okay. I didn't say it. You said it. Since the team moved to Winnipeg, the fewest number of goals Brian Little has had in an 82-game season is 23. Thus far this year, he has 15 goals. Over or under Brian Little having 23.5 goals at season's end?
I think he finishes strong and it's over.
Yeah, I think over too, Drew. Yeah. He's struggled lately. I think he's going to bust out of that. I think he's about 24, 25.
Since 2008-2009, his first full season in Chicago, the fewest number of goals Andrew Ladd has scored in a season is 15.
Mm-hmm.
This year, he has 10 goals in 49 games played.
Over.
Over or under 15.5 goals at season's end for Andrew Ladd?
Over. And, one thing I would take, I thought Andrew Ladd was really moving well and played a really solid game against the Coyotes. Forget the fact that they're not a great team. He was skating well. He was moving. He was engaged. I haven't really seen him that engaged in a while. I'm going to take that to be get a little rest in him, and he'll pump it up in the second half.
Yeah, and Ladd hasn't scored in 13 goals, but he's always around 20, 25 goals. So I think he'll be over in this case.
This year, in 49 games, the Jets have scored 38 goals in the third period, the fourth fewest in the NHL. At season's end, the Jets will have over or under 70 third-period goals, which would be 32 third-period goals in their final 33 games.
I'm going to say over that number. I mean, that's what you're saying, a goal a game, basically?
It's a goal, a third period goal a game, which they currently aren't averaging.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say over. I'm going to push it up a bit, get a little bit more intensity there. And again, Drew, if you put in that terrible roster they did for the last five games before the Arizona game, then it probably will be under. But if they're going to stay healthy, and I'm kind of banking on that prediction, then I think they'll be over.
Yeah, Richie, I'll go over too, just because if you look at the Jets last season, they had very many more third period goals, and that's been an Achilles heel, failing to get those loser points in the third period. So I'll say over. They're going to, as Richie mentioned, make a bit of a push, and I think they'll have more third period goals. Fourth fewest in the NHL, though. That's not good.
Paul Postma has played two games for the Jets this season. At season's end, Paul Postma will have played over or under 5.5 games for the Jets.
It's going to be tough for him to get into the lineup, but who knows? I'll say under.
I'm going to say under, too. I don't know why they keep signing him. I really don't.
It's not to play him.
Yeah, it's not to play him. And you have him for 2 years, which I don't really know why Postma would sign. I guess you get paid for 2 years, but he doesn't seem to be in the plans, and I don't know why he's part of the roster, so I'm going to say under.
Mark Scheifele has 24 points in 38 games for the Jets this season. With 33 games remaining, Scheifele will finish the season with over or under 47.5 points, which would be 24 points in the final 33 games.
I'll say over. Missed seven games before the last game versus the Arizona Coyotes, and I think at the clip that he was playing at, I think he'll get to probably finish with in the low 50s.
What's your number again, Drew? It has to be what?
Over under 47.5 points, which is 24 points in the final 33 games.
Okay, and he's on pace right now for about 21 points over that.
That's right. He would have to pick it up.
I'm going to say under there.
You're going to say under there?
Just between probably 20 to 24, but a little bit under.
And that's assuming, of course, he stays healthy, which he hasn't been for the last, most of the last month, give or take. Between today and the February 29th NHL trade deadline, so, 29 days, Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff will make over or under 1.5 trades.
How do you make a half trade?
You can't push on that one, Izzy.
You can't push on that one. It prevents you from
pushing. If you sit on the fence, it'll break.
Over. I think he makes two trades. One of them I don't know, and the other I don't know.
Oh, glad you shared that insight.
Well, I mean, if you don't think he's signing both Buffalo and Ladd, I mean, we can assume then that he's going to trade one of those players. That would be one trade.
That's one of the trades.
If you're trading one of those players, assuming it's for future assets likely, then you probably want to make another move or two to enhance your future.
Sounds like Richie's going over.
I'm going to go over on that.
He's going to be wheeling and dealing Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Well, that would be interesting.
It certainly would be. Final.
If he signs both, he might not make any moves.
Well, if he signs both.
I'm thinking it's going to be over. I don't think he's signing both.
Final over-under question. The Jets have 12 games remaining before the February 29th NHL trade deadline. Assuming both remain healthy, Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien will be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup for over or under 21.5 man games until the trade deadline.
Shouldn't the question just be, is Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien going to be traded?
Well, no, the question is also about when will they be, if so, when would they be traded? If you think they're traded early, you would pick an under on this one.
Under.
I'm going over. I don't think they'd trade him early.
You think they'd go right up until the deadline there?
Close to it, yeah.
Well, there you have. That is it for over-under, and per Richard's request, I'm out of my word, I will recalibrate all of your answers and present them back at the end of the season. Well, how about?
We have to be held accountable here, don't we, Jim?
I have no confidence that I'm going to beat Rich, by the way. Rich is going to kill me on this one.
I don't remember what predictions earlier. That's what I want to know.
Well, I will go back, and I will at the end of the year, we can do a segment where we look back at all the over-unders for the twice a year we do it and provide all the answers about our prediction skills. If we're Karnak or not. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL with some trade talk throughout the league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
Drew, good luck trying to find a John Scott t-shirt, John Scott gloves, John Scott jersey, because it's all sold out. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Like, this stuff has become...
It's a cult following. It's a...
Life of its own.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
There you go. That's a life of its own. The hockey world, of course, the focus of their attention is Nashville, Tennessee, for this weekend's All-Star break. And then yesterday, of course, all the players were subjected to the media inquiries, and that includes Dustin Byfuglien, and a lot of wringing hands throughout the city and throughout the hockey world.
I don't know why.
About Buff's comments, and, you know, with regard to if he enjoys being in Winnipeg, here's the quote. You know, is his preference to remain in Winnipeg? That was the question. Quote, "I just want to put on a jersey, to be honest with you," Byfuglien said. "I don't mind Winnipeg at all. It's close to home for me. It's probably the closest I'll ever get to play by home. There's so many good things that I like about Winnipeg. I can do my outdoor stuff that I love to do. I have no problem being up there." You know, people are saying, you know, because by him saying, "I have no problem being up there," it's different than "I want to be there." Do you have any problem with Dustin Byfuglien's quote? Do you think that it's a less than ringing endorsement for Winnipeg? Are you surprised about the quote given to the assembled media in Nashville yesterday?
No, and I think it's a non-story, and I don't know why we're not talking more about Buff's big fishing day with Ben Hankinson on Lake Winnipeg. I mean, like, why aren't we talking about that? I mean, I'm obviously joking, but, I mean...
Free Press covered that already.
Buff has said many times over the years he loves the city of Winnipeg and he loves playing here. And then he's asked during contract negotiations, Drew, about staying in Winnipeg and all of that. And I mean, I realize for us, it's good, you know, fodder for the radio show, but I just, it's all over
the internet.
I find it funny how
we shouldn't be talking about it.
I mean, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. He didn't say anything disrespectful to Winnipeg. I mean, if he would have said, "I love Winnipeg" and all that, you know, everybody probably wouldn't have even paid attention. It would have been just like, okay, you know, but there's nothing to believe. There's no story here. And there's no reason to believe, I should say, that Buff doesn't want to stay here, doesn't want to sign a contract and all of that. I mean, it's a tough time right now. I think one of the telling quotes, Richie, of kind of that came from Media Day at the All-Star Game is Buff actually admitting that it's been tough this year being a pending UFA. I mean, he's admitted that. And sometimes you don't hear these guys admit how hard it is to be in the middle of contract negotiations.
Well,
he's saying, like, ESPN
a couple weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Where he said it was a distraction. He would be lying if he said it wasn't a distraction. That was, I think, 2 weeks ago we played that clip.
And Buff's more of an honest guy. You're going to get more out of him than you would Ladd, right? That's just the way he is.
He doesn't talk very much, right? So when he talked, it was a half an hour he talked, something like that.
Well,
in Nashville, I mean, that's going to be a little more open. So all the national stories were he doesn't give Winnipeg a hug, really. He doesn't give him a ringing endorsement. He kind of plays it neutral. And it's funny because the Winnipeg headlines were Byfuglien likes playing close to home. And the national headlines were, you know, if you go right now onto TSN.ca, right under the top headlines, the first headline says, quote, "Buff gives lukewarm response on Jets." And so that is the national headline. And if you were to look at, you know, the Free Press or the Sun, you get a different story, which I find really interesting. So, I mean, you question, you ask yourself, okay, are we too close to this to make a neutral kind of third-party judgment? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think you should read too much into that, but I think you also shouldn't read nothing into that. And what I mean is he's in the middle of a negotiation, as we're talking about. He's in the middle of a negotiation. He's not going to just show his cards and give it all away based upon the fact that he hasn't been paid yet. So I thought it was, I thought I wouldn't make too much of it. Again, you know, he's part of a negotiation too. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff certainly says nothing. So why does Buff have to say that much?
You don't think that his agent said to Buff, you know, before you go out there, they're going to ask you obviously about the negotiations, you know, just play your cards close to your chest.
Yeah.
I have no, I mean, it's not lukewarm in the least, but he, you know, it's not like Evander Kane when Kane would, you know, refused, they would go out of his way to not say anything about Winnipeg and not say anything nice about Winnipeg.
Well, the Sun has a Winnipeg, it's Buff's kind of town. So it's funny how you get the two different perspectives.
Sure, it's all about perspective.
I think, Drew, we also have to consider that Buff is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, spontaneous guy as well. I mean, we remember last year during the playoffs when he said, you know, as long as we stick together, we'll be all right. He's the type of guy that I think, you know, I realize that speech was compared to Marshawn Lynch's, you know, comments that non-comments.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah, and but I think with Buff too, he's not necessarily the most politically correct with his his cliche answers and all of that. So also, that's even more reason not to take it seriously, I think.
Yeah, I think the answer is perfectly suitable. It's, you know, I like it. I can play hockey there and I'll be fine. I can play hockey somewhere else and I'll be fine.
Drew, don't you think
in the middle of a negotiation, that's the answer you give.
Regardless of what Buff was saying there, Drew, don't you get the impression that we were going to dissect it anyways? Even if it was a non-answer, I feel like there would be stories written about it.
All these guys have to.
To your point, as you could say, I'm happy in Winnipeg and still not sign with the Jets because they don't pay him enough.
Sure.
It's fair.
Yeah, of course. You could. I mean, you know, whatever his answer is doesn't determine where he's going to play hockey next year. He's not held to some sort of, you know.
I guess the question is if he talks about Winnipeg in a loving way, does it put more pressure on the team in this market to sign him?
Well,
if you feel like the team would be affected by that pressure. I love Winnipeg. I want to stay there. And then, you know, February 28th comes and everybody on the station and in writing says, you have a player who loves to be here and you won't sign him.
Richie, I feel like with Steven Stamkos as well at the All-Star game a couple of days ago, or it was yesterday probably, asked about his pending UFA status. These guys don't know if they're going to be signed.
Something weird about that one.
That's a whole different kettle of fish right there.
And then you hear what Dreger said to us on SportsCenter this morning, that, or LeBron said, maybe he's got no trade and he wants to make a cup run. Maybe he'll just let it.
I think he is. I don't think
that we've talked about that on the show too, Drew.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like somebody who's going to be making any friends in Tampa Bay.
No, it doesn't sound
unless
like
he wins the cup.
That's right. Unless you win a cup and then it heals all wounds. But if they lose you for nothing and you don't win the cup, it's a real big blow to that organization.
Tell me.
But I mean, you look back at, you know, who was the last player? I'm going back to this offseason, who spoke glowingly about wanting to stay in Winnipeg. It was Lee Stempniak, right? His agent, he came out, said, I'd love to be in Winnipeg. I'd love to stay on the Jets. Why did he do that? I mean, to me, it's because Lee Stempniak didn't think he had very many options at that point in time. So he's trying to put pressure on the organization. Dustin Byfuglien's a guy who's got a ton of options. He doesn't have to blow smoke up the organization's butt.
Didn't Stempniak do that after the fact, though?
No, he did it before he was signed in New Jersey.
Right, but after they told them they were moving on.
I don't exactly know, but I think you're probably correct.
Well, he said they're moving on with young players.
Yeah, right. And, you know,
so they already rejected him.
Right, but you speak glowingly about it. You come out in the media, you know, maybe they changed their mind or something along those lines. When you're a player with fewer options and you think one team in particular might be that desired place, you put pressure on that organization by speaking publicly in the media. If you're Dustin Byfuglien, that would have 30 teams lining up to try and sign you, you don't have to blow smoke up one organization in particular. I think he's fine playing Winnipeg. I think he's fine playing anywhere else as well.
I don't take it as being he doesn't want to be in Winnipeg. I just take it as being guy wants to get paid, and he'll go where he needs to get paid, and that's completely his right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he said. He said he can load up his boat and go fishing anywhere. Most places have a lake relatively nearby.
Well, it's funny that he mentioned that Winnipeg is the closest place to where he's from, which is Roseau, but there's one other team that's been rumored to be very interested in Byfuglien, and it happens to be in the same state.
That would be the Minnesota Wild, is what you're hinting at there? Well, that would certainly be another team that would be close to home, and they would have lots of fishing.
They spend a lot of money on the back end, too, though. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of questions. I mean, I just think that the idea that that was a lukewarm response, a little misleading given the full context of everything else.
Well, you also have national writers who don't cover the team don't really know them.
This is a Twitter special.
No, I don't think it's a Twitter special necessarily. I think it's a different media perspective special.
There's that too, Drew. But you know, it's kind of funny. I think in this day and age too, we read quotes and we don't actually see and hear the quote. And the way a quote comes out sometimes in print isn't really a good indication of what was meant or if anything was meant by a comment.
Well, I think the answer that wouldn't have raised too much of a buzz would have been, I really like playing Winnipeg. I'd love to stay there. Let's see if we can make it work contract-wise. That it doesn't probably get you a much national attention. This comment, and I don't disagree with you, Drew, about speaking to Ben Hankinson and what you're going to say here. And that's fine. That's what you pay him for.
That's right.
You say, I'll put on any jersey kind of thing. So you don't know if it's actually what he's thinking either.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to read more into it than what it says, I think, is a bit of an error in judgment by a lot of different people here. Pro and con, depending on the side you take with regard to the Winnipeg Jets.
And Damian Cox wrote about it too, and he's seems to be generally negative about Winnipeg. So I wouldn't really read too much into him.
Who cares what he thinks?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he has perspective. Like, he parachutes in once in a while and has this perspective of the city. And some of it, I can't say is inaccurate, but some of it I think is a little bit over the top.
You know, the people who cover the Winnipeg Jets on a day-to-day basis didn't bat an eye at Dustin Byfuglien's comments. The ones who cover the Jets once every 6 months.
It was
like at the beginning of the year. Or, a month into the season when the Jets would randomly show up on a national hockey broadcast. Oh, the big, bad, physical Winnipeg Jets. Well, no, guys. You haven't seen the Jets obviously play. You haven't watched them at all.
But that's them about most teams, though. They don't really know.
No, they live in the here and the now, and they think that they wait for the narratives to come out from the local guys, and then that's when they shape their opinion on it. You know, right or wrong, they don't have time to watch every game. I'm not going to criticize them for that.
Let's talk more about Buff being in the hardest shot. Let's talk more about, some of the fish that he caught. I mean, this is...
Well, let's not talk about the fish that he caught, because that's just a whole different story. We can talk about the hardest shot, or isn't he doing the fastest skater,
hardest shot, and then the breakaway contest, because he's, obviously that's... I think every player's in the breakaway contest.
What's John Scott in?
I hope it's not the fastest skater, because he's going to lose
badly. That's what would be funny if he was the fastest skater.
He's in the hardest shot contest. The NHL does have a sense of humor. I think that's pretty plain.
They're like, yeah, Gary Bettman and John Scott had a talk.
Yeah. Did you actually hear the clip on 1050?
Yes, it was
Leafs
funny.
Lunch about Jerry trying to call Sidney Crosby to play in the All-Star game. That was a pretty good one.
Any show with Jeff O'Neill is good with me.
Yeah. Hey, got to love O-Dog.
Let's head to break. Oh, dog. Well, someone.
We're tight.
Oh, wow.
We're like this.
Well, we did go out for a dinner.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
There was a dinner.
Let's head to break. Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey is going to join us next segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, our website. Is illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Tom Lynn. Tom is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He is currently a principal with Veritas Hockey. Tom, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Drew, Ezra, and Richard. This is a distinguished panel. I am a little nervous.
I think you'll be able to handle handle 15 minutes with us, Tom. I hope we'll be gentle at the very least.
This is like federal court. All right, I'm ready. Okay. Fire away.
There you go. Actually, Tom, wanted to start. You have an interesting tie with the guy who's really been probably the most famous hockey player in the world for the past month or 6 weeks. That's John Scott. Current All-Star John Scott, you were the one who signed him out of Michigan Tech. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and I think John is relevant today for so many reasons. Like, this will lead into another topic, which we can get to later, but just as a late developer, so many hockey players at 15, 16, 17 say, oh, I didn't get a college offer, I didn't make my WHL team, I'm going to go to work or go do something else. John didn't emerge as an NHL prospect until he was 23 years old. So if you can imagine, 6 years after a lot of kids give up on their dreams, there he was, a junior at Michigan Tech and starting to play more regularly. As a senior, he played regularly, but as a 6'8 defenseman, it was kind of here and there. And it wasn't until my boss, Doug Risebrough, wanted to see him with me that Doug said, Tom, you got to sign this guy. What's your downside? And so, yes, we pursued him at that point.
And did you think that he was actually going? I mean, for all the slings and arrows he receives, he has played a significant number of NHL games. Did you foresee him as an actual NHL player when you signed him?
We saw him as an NHL prospect. And just backing up here, when you see this with the Jets, a lot of people tell stories about, when I first saw John Doe, I knew he was going to be an NHL player. Outside of like a Sidney Crosby, you don't really know. You try to identify at the team level. Prospects, because you're going to have 50 or 60 of them in a given year in your organization between draft picks and free agent signings and contracts. So what we saw in John, which other people weren't seeing, was potential. But if you remember, he was signed to an AHL deal out of college, so he wasn't a high enough prospect to get an NHL contract. I signed to an AHL deal with an option for an NHL deal, and we said, if you go to work, kind of like Derek Bougard many years before, hey, you go to work down in the ECHL, learn how to skate better and learn the game, then you'll have a chance. So we saw a very long-term potential, I guess is the way to put it.
You're talking to Tom Lynn regarding John Scott. Going to talk, Tom, about the All-Star Game now, which, of course, is in Nashville, the center of attention for the hockey world. There's been a lot of talk lately about maybe increasing suspensions for players who do not attend the All-Star Game, who bow out with injuries or claim to have injuries right before Ovechkin, of course, Jonathan Toews. You know, having been on the management side with your time with the Minnesota Wild and now being a player agent, what is your take on the situation about sort of forcing players to play in the All-Star Game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pro Bowl is facing a similar thing in football.
Sure.
And I think it really has to come down to the players, and that's a long, considered opinion. I last paid attention to the All-Star Game when I was a league lawyer back in the late 1990s, because the All-Star Game is simply a corporate and marketing event. You know, it has very little to do with hockey. And so once I was on the management side, the All-Star break was a time to either take a break or, you know, look over your systems and your scouts and your amateur players. It really has nothing in our minds to do with hockey. And so looking at where the game is now, if the players want to, and the players split the profits now through the collective bargaining agreement, if the players think this is worthwhile for their going forward and earning money for the league that they split, then they should commit to it. If not, then they should not. But a middle ground right now where you have people pushing players to play and players not wanting to play, that's not happy for anyone, right? So I think the next iteration would be putting it more on the players to say, you want to do this or not. And either way, you know, be all in.
Tom, we wanted to get your take on the Dennis Wiedemann situation. I think you'd agree that this is one of the most bizarre incidents that we've seen in the NHL in a really long time. He's been suspended indefinitely. Can you explain the process that he's going to go through before a decision is made on how many games he's going to be suspended for?
Yeah, it's a little different in this instance. You're testing my knowledge of the disciplinary process, which goes back a bit, but it's not your typical on ice because it's abusive linesman, which is carved out of the usual discipline because it's considered more serious and the league has more discretion there. And it's hard to really gauge this one because, as you've seen from the video, it's a bizarre incident. It's a guy with no history and not a situation where he was at odds with the referee or anything like a you've seen some in the past. You just skate along and it happens. And so in the league's place, they're dealing with the referee officials union who want something done. They're dealing with the public who want some kind of clarity on this. And they're dealing with the players association, the players' own rights. It's a tough jumble. I think in the end, this is going to be more of an attempt at crafting a compromise than finding justice. You know, Colin Campbell and the rest will try to find what will make the fewest people angry at us. But, you know, clearly he'll get a suspension. And I don't know if we'll ever know the answer of what was in his mind. But he just got plowed into the board. So who knows? He might not even know in his mind. He might have memory loss.
Tom, you wrote in your book, How to Bake an NHL Franchise, about expansion. I wanted to ask you about, you know, are you hearing anything in terms of possible NHL expansion and what it may look like? And a second part to the question is, now as an agent, are people taking into consideration the possibility of protecting a player from an expansion draft?
Well, you know, that there's a you hit on too many issues there before, but let me run through them. We're all assuming expansion's happening. It may not still, but it makes too much sense on a number of fronts. You know, one, there's expansion fees that are generated for the owner, so they like it. Number two, there are more jobs for the players, so they like it. Number three, it should bring down the cap for teams that want some relief, because the markets they're looking at are smaller markets. So on the whole, over the course of 5 years, you would assume that would have a slight breaking effect on the cap. And number four, a lot of teams that are deep in trouble with contracts and players stuck there would see it as a way to jettison problems, as it were. So it makes all the sense in the world, whether the league can figure it out as far as the venues and the award of the franchise and everything else that's there. So that's number one. Number two, on players and protecting players, it has become a big issue, I think, quietly in the negotiation of contracts for two types of players. One, top players, and number two, marginal players who might play, you know, the type that get called up and down season after season. They play 30 games in the NHL and then 15 the next year, then 50. You know, those are the guys who have to decide whether to take $400,000 to play in Europe next year or to stick in the NHL, and it's a harder decision for them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tom Lynn. Tom is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a player agent with Veritas Hockey. Tom, we spent a lot of time in the show talking about the salary cap and the projected salary cap. We know that we're not expecting a rise, if at all, next season, primarily due to the low Canadian dollar. How much information are agents provided about the expected salary cap figures for next year and then years to come?
Well, we get the top line information, I believe, that the Board of Governors gets from league officials, a little bit delayed, but basically both sides, the PA and the league, get together, they analyze the information, and then they tell the respective memberships the same thing, or at least they tell each other the same general numbers. Now, Don Fear's take on it might be different than Gary Bettman's when he expresses that in our agent meetings, but I think it's the same idea, which is, we're struggling under two things. One is lack of economic growth, which is the larger part of things, and the smaller part would be more temporary, which is the Canadian dollar. And that could change, you know, in 2 years. But right now, it's killing the Canadian teams.
Tom, as you know, the NHL, NHLPA often get criticized for not suspending players enough for illegal checks. How does the NHLPA specifically balance the safety of its players versus defending the suspensions that are handed down by the NHL for those illegal checks?
I've noticed it's very different now than it was 10 years ago. So under Bob Goodenow, as you might remember, it was a straight out union deal. It was like, if our guy's accused of a crime, we're going to protect him. And all the way down the line. And then during the interim period, under Kelly and some interim guys, that was less clear. But I would say generally the threat was, if a union member is faced with discipline, then the union puts all their weight behind getting no discipline. And I would say under Mr. Fear, he does a lot more speaking with the players as he goes around about safety issues, where they want to go. He forced the league to include players on the competition committee and the player safety committees. So he's soften that hardline stance somewhat to say, all right, we're going to protect our players, their jobs, their reputations. At the same time, we're going to make an active effort to get players involved in the safety process. So it's changing.
Tom, Brian Burke, something familiar to you, he proposed recently, he talked about it in public and has been apparently campaigning behind the scenes, to expand the width of the ice surface by about 5 feet. What are your thoughts on that? Do you like the idea? And I guess second part is, do you think it'll eventually happen?
I'm a little surprised. I mean, I've known Brian since 1995. And although he's predictably unpredictable and strong-willed, this one I don't get. Because what it boils down to in my mind is, let's create 4 to 6 more feet on the outside of the ice for smaller skilled players to hide. You know? I mean, who's scoring from the boards? Who's, you know, making plays from there? All the goals right now are being created within 40 feet of the net, unless he's manage a Stephen Hawking way to fold 5 more feet into the 40 feet close to the net, we're not going to have more room in the area where goals are scored. And unfortunately, whenever you increase the ice surface, you run the risk of remember the old four corners offense in college basketball, you run the risk of a skilled team getting up by a goal or two, simply keeping possession and playing keep away from the other team. So I would say I'd be against it. I would think when the league studied it carefully, they'd be against it. And for those fans who add really excitable hockey fans who want to see a quick hockey game, find a Binghamton Senators game on the internet where the rink in the AHL is tiny and the boards are live. The puck's always in play. There's never a dull moment.
Tom Lynn is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tom is, of course, a former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a player agent with Veritas Hockey. Tom, we're less than a month away from the NHL trade deadline. Can you walk us through the process of completing a trade right before the trade deadline and what needs to be done to ensure that a trade isn't completed after the 3 p.m. Eastern deadline?
That's a good one.
Yes, and a lot of people wouldn't understand how tight it gets at the end. The GM's making phone calls, and the number two guy is aware who does the paperwork, which is different in every organization. You know, some have an assistant GM, some have a director of hockey ops, some have someone who's more secretarial, but someone's there with the paperwork because, let's say, the trade deadline is an hour away. You've got these papers in front of you. You're trying to follow the potential deals being made. In my case, when I was with Wild, I was also making deals, and so Doug and I were, their GM, were operating parallel tracks, but we're writing everything down so that if on the phone to GM, say, all right, we'll do the deal. That has to be scribbled out legibly, unlike Phil Esposito's attempts in some years past. You got to scribble it out legibly. You got to send it to the other side, get both sides signed it, and get it into the league through their fax, or now electronically through the fax, by the deadline. And I'll tell you, there's times when we've made deals with less than 10 minutes left, and you're writing it down, and you have little panic attacks, such as, do we have a fifth-round pick in 2016? If you remember, you offered it to someone else. So it's an interesting development, and every year you hear stories afterwards of trades that didn't happen simply because they couldn't be completed in time, sometimes for paperwork reasons, you know, not for substance, but they couldn't figure out the pick situation. So it's crazy.
Tom, sticking with trades, and you've been on both sides. You're now an agent, and you were, as Drew mentioned, you were a former assistant general manager of the Wild. How do teams and agents navigate through a no-trade list if a player has a no-trade list in his contract?
Well, it's how it's set up in the contract. Some contracts will say the player has to submit the list in writing by a certain date, you know, by July 15th every year, or sometimes during the season by January 15th. Other ones simply lay out the player can reject a trade to five teams, and it's not until the player is going to be traded that they go to the player. Generally, a team wants the list in advance. So I'd say the vast majority of no-trade or limited no-trade clauses, you have to lay it out in advance, just so the team knows who they're dealing with. I think it's brutal when you don't have it laid out in advance and you're a team, and you're trying to make a deal, but it's, you know, you're juggling with objects you're not even sure what they are yet, because you don't know if your kid will go to Edmonton or not, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that can be a difficulty. So you, as a team, you want it laid out in advance. I think as a player, you want to keep as much power as you can, but you feel more comfortable laying out in advance before the season, you know, the 5 or 10 teams you won't go to either.
Tom Lynn is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a player agent with Veritas Hockey. Tom, really appreciate your time this morning and some great insight into a lot of different topics that the average hockey fan may not know about.
My pleasure, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You know you're right, Drew.
I don't know the song, Ezzy, so I have no idea what these lyrics are or anything along those lines. I mean, it shouldn't come as a surprise at this point in time that I don't know what the song is. I rarely know what the songs we play are.
You know you're right.
Okay, who's by?
Nirvana.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, this was an unreleased song that I think they released maybe 7 or 8 years ago or something, 10 years ago.
From Beyond the Grave?
Well, yeah, it was something that wasn't included, I guess, on the last album. What was the last album? In Utero? In Utero?
Sure.
I guess Unplugged, too, but yeah. Anyways, good song.
Okay. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Just got a text from our good friend Sean Asor saying that the interview with Tom Lynn was a great one, and to tell you guys about that. And, you know, we've got a good relationship with Tom. We've got to know him over the years. And this time of year, everybody wants to know about trades and how that process works. And I think it's pretty interesting, guys, because this year you could potentially see 3, 4, 5 big-time UFAs moved before the trade deadline.
It is a more intriguing trade deadline than in years past. I'll agree with that. If you look at, I mean, there's the whole Stamkos one, and who knows how that's going to work. You have
Eric Staal, Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien,
Louis Erickson. There's some players who are more than just sort of your trade deadline, you know, depth players that we've seen in past years. That it could be a very interesting February 29th, or, you know, the weeks leading up to February 29th. The Dennis Wiedemann incident, we talked about it briefly with Tom and got his opinion on it. This is one of the more bizarre ones you're going to see in the NHL, guys. What's your take on Wiedemann? You know, is he deserving of a suspension? How many games should it be? Was it a deliberate act, or was he, you know, in the throes of a, you know, he suffered a big hit right before? Was he in the throes of a head trauma? You know, how did you see the Dennis Wiedemann incident, and, you know, what do you expect the ramifications of it to be?
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like every time I watch it, I'm just as kind of confused, perplexed by the incident as the previous time. And I've watched it probably 10 or 15 times now. and he clearly is going to get suspended. He's been suspended indefinitely, but it doesn't really make any sense to me why he did that. And it's possible that he was feeling the effects of that hit, mm-hmm. and he wasn't thinking clearly. And you have to give him maybe the benefit of the doubt, Richie. But at the end of the day, I mean, he drills a linesman into the boards, and the linesman had to spend a night in the hospital, and he had to go through the post-concussion. I mean, Dennis Wideman is, you know, 200-plus-pound defenseman, and the linesman was completely helpless, right?
Sure.
It's very bizarre. And
linesman's name is Don Henderson. We should mention him and wish him well, of course.
He's a veteran linesman. And, I mean, yeah, absolutely, we wish him well. I've just never seen anything like this. I mean, we've seen abusive official in the past. Daniel Carcillo, I believe it was 2013. He got suspended for kind of going up to the ref and after, I believe it was a fight, but...
Yeah, that's even that okay. Like, it's such in the heat of the moment. He's mad. Carcillo's a loose cannon. It's a fight. This is just weird.
Right. And that's what I'm saying, Rich. Like, I can't figure out why he would do this. Like, is it accidental, Drew? I think if you watch it, you can see that Dennis Wideman's going to the bench. The linesman's there. He doesn't make any attempt to get out of the way. It's kind of accidental. But the thing to
it
me that
looks accidental to me.
The thing that's bizarre about it is that he doesn't look back and he doesn't seem to be showing any remorse on the bench shortly after.
Well, he goes and he apologizes to the linesman during the next sort of TV timeout or break in the action. I mean, I have to assume that he thought the linesman was a member of the Nashville Predators.
That seems like a weird assumption to me.
Well, then how else do you explain the incident?
He was mad that there was no penalty call.
You think he deliberately hit the linesman?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I think that, yeah.
So you think that he should be suspended for
20 games.
20 games.
20 games, yes, I do.
Really?
Yep.
I'm surprised. You know, that's the first time I've actually heard somebody think that this was a deliberate malicious act and not, you know, somebody in the throes of, head trauma.
How many minutes did he play after the injury, the quote-unquote injury, Drew?
Played the entire game.
Yeah. Well, that's weird. I thought he was not able to think right.
Well,
wouldn't the coach know that and not put him out there? Wouldn't he know that and say, hold on a second, I'm not right? Doesn't always happen, but you'd think so.
You know, Drew, it's a valid
question. Especially after what happened, you'd think he'd want to do that, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Richie, it's a valid question that Drew brings up, but I find it hard to believe that he thought that the linesman was a player on the Nashville Predators.
That's it's weird. Over thousands and thousands and thousands of hockey games that hasn't happened before. I'm pretty sure when I'm playing hockey, I know the linesman wears stripes.
Yeah, I agree
with
you.
And it
looks
nothing like a Nashville Predators. By the way, why don't we talk about the Nashville Predators bench reaction to it? Have you watched that?
I haven't.
Watch the video and watch that.
I've watched the video.
They stand up, but they're just like, what the heck's going on here?
I'll have to
just deck the official.
I mean, he does just deck the official. You're not wrong.
Drew, some weird things have happened in the NHL and all other hockey leagues. I mean, it's a game with emotion, right? But you see that, and you just are kind of thinking, like, what's going through his head? And
yeah, I'm just watching the Predators bench, and you're absolutely right. They're like, what did we just witness?
Yeah, and I know Shane Knight played with him, Dennis Wideman in Boston, and he said he's a more mild-mannered guy, and he would know. And I'm not saying, you know, never come back to the league, but that's 20 games for me, Drew. And as you can't be decking an official like that. And the situation is just weird. And the issue with you pushing a ref after a fight or a linesman, excuse me, they're breaking it up usually after a fight. I'm not defending that, but you're angry. Things are going, and you're looking at him face to face, so he knows you're angry. And this one, he comes from behind and decks an unsuspecting official.
I don't disagree with anything you've said regarding, you know, how it played out. It just, to me, so bizarre. I mean, you know, it's not like he gets up from the hit and he's infuriated by the hit.
Well, he slams a stick on the ice after he gets hit and there's no call. Watch that. He slams a stick on the ice and he's PO'd that there was no call. And he skates to the bench and he just wants to go to the bench and probably start yelling. And the linesman is in his way, where he's supposed to be. That's where he's supposed to be. He's not supposed to be in the middle of the ice, getting in the way of the actual, you know, guys in the middle of the ice. He's supposed to be on the boards there. And he just decks him and keeps going.
I think it's safe to say Drew's been using the word bizarre a lot. And I think that's appropriate.
It's bizarre.
I think it's safe to say that this is one of the weirdest incidents that's happened in hockey in 10 years. As Rich mentioned, I mean, guys get into fights, and the linesmen are there to break it up. And by the way, the linesmen in the NHL are tough as nails.
Yeah, for sure.
They have to get in between guys that are 6'4", 6'5", 230 pounds. Sure, I guess if, you know, Peluso maybe grabs the linesman, you know, in the heat of the moment, it's not as big of a deal. But as Rich mentioned, I mean, the linesman is completely in the middle of nowhere, no man's land. Weidman's going to the bench. Again, I hope that after this is over, because Dennis Weidman doesn't have a history of suspensions, I hope that he's able to move on from this. But
yeah,
just, I mean, as Rich mentioned, I mean, you can't deck a linesman and get away with it.
And no one's ever saying that. I mean, if I thought he recognized that individual, Don Henderson, as a linesman, I agree. 20 games, you can give him even more if you think it's a deliberate attempt to hit an official. It's just so bizarre that somebody would be so blatant about it that I can't believe he thought that he knew what he was doing.
Drew, in all of my years of playing hockey or watching hockey, I've seen abusive official before, but it's like Rich mentioned. It's usually in a fight and a guy loses his mind.
Yeah, he's being held back or something.
He's being held back, and then he goes, I've never seen that incident in all of my years of watching hockey.
You know, here's somebody on Twitter chiming in, Brian Bodis on Twitter. He says, my take, I've been knocked senseless in an MMA fight. When I regained my senses, I grabbed the referee. I was completely confused.
I should be training with Brian.
Yeah, you should be an MMA fighter.
Teach me how to do a guillotine or something.
That'd be a great idea. You should be in the MMA.
Okay, and what did he do after he grabbed the referee? Well, did he play another 15 minutes in the game or whatever it was?
But do you blame Weidman for that, or do you blame the NHL's joke of a concussion spotter system?
Well, wouldn't he not? Do you blame the organization? Wouldn't he have not been able to be functional on the ice after that?
You know, maybe he's stunned. I mean, I don't know. I just, it's so bizarre to me that you would deliberately cross check a linesman, especially for a guy.
And grabbing would be different than body checking from behind, right?
Sure, but I mean, I can.
And he does it in front of two benches. Like, he does it in front of everybody.
Okay, so.
So weird.
He lost his composure, in my opinion. Maybe there was a concussion factor there, Drew. I'm not discounting that. I just personally am not so sure that's the case. I'm not saying it can't be. I'm just not so sure that's the case.
Let's move on to analyzing the All-Star game.
It looked like to me, hold on a second, it looked like to me, like that was he lost his cool, and he hit the guy in front of him, and then after realized it and felt terrible about it, and I think he should be punished, and then you move on.
And exactly, Richie, and people make mistakes.
Yeah,
he made a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Move on. Dennis Weidman doesn't have a previous history.
That's right.
This
that's
shouldn't
right.
be something that ruins
How many
his
games?
Career.
So
20 games.
You think he gets 20?
I think he should get 20.
You think he should get 20. What do you think he does get at the end of the day when the hearing takes place supposedly on Tuesday?
I think he gets 20.
You think he gets 20? You think the NHL brings down a full 20 games
on
him?
You can't be doing this to officials.
I agree.
You can't give him five games.
I wholeheartedly agree that you can't be doing this to officials.
What do you guys think he should get?
I think he'll get or will get.
Both. You asked me that, so both.
Yeah. I think
who's asking the questions here?
Well, I'm asking you guys. I think he should get 20. I think he will get 20. What do you think he should and will get?
I think he should get 10, and I think he will get 10.
I think he should get 20, and he's going to get 15.
Okay. Well, so 10, 15, or 20, that's where our odds are betting. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in George Johnson in Calgary, talk a little bit more about this incident, and talk about the Flames, a surprise struggling team this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.